This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Riot by Tilly Cole. Narrated by Guy Locke and Amelie Griffin. Prologue 901. The Blood Pit, Georgia. Unknown location. The coarse sand crunched under my feet as I pounded down the tunnel. The loud stomping of thousands of spectators, bloodthirsty, rich spectators, all slamming their feet against the ground above, filled every inch of the air around me. My muscles twitched as I held one of my kinjals, my treasured Russian Cossack daggers, in each hand. I spun them as my blood rushed through my veins, igniting my bloodlust. The thunderous, rhythmic stomping of the waiting crowd grew faster as my legs pushed my body into a steady run. My lips rolled back over my teeth. A low growl tore from my mouth. The echoes of my heavy, excited breathing beat in tandem with my fast-moving feet. The pitch darkness of the tunnel gave way to light as I approached the ramp that led to the pit where hearts were pierced and monsters were slain. The pit where blood ran as freely as water, where flesh slipped from the bone as easily as the most tender of meats, where champions reigned supreme. The pit where I held court. The king, the demon shade, the famed pit bull. I was unbeaten. No one that Master dragged in from above ground could take me down. They barely even made a scratch when they attacked. For years, I'd reigned as champion. I owned this sand. I owned every soul freed in this ring. In the blood pit, I was a god. As the mouth of the pit came into sight, I picked up speed as the crowd roared above. Then I was free as I burst into the arena, rushing forward to slay anyone put in my path. I swung. My treasured kinjals in seconds sliced through not one, but two males who ran at me without skill or a hint of competitive spirit. Their lifeless bodies slumped to the ground behind me. But I didn't look back. My eyes tracked the remaining three fighters, circling, craving my blood. I smiled. I kept my head lowered and my eyes off theirs. They didn't stand a chance. These males were already dead to me. More fresh meat soon to be disposed of. The first ran at me, quickly followed by a second. I cut them down without breaking a sweat. Then the final opponent edged forward, swinging a bladed chain around his head. I ducked left, then immediately to the right, until we passed each other. I pushed by his side and sent my trusty blades into his torso. I kept my attention focused as the dying male fell to the ground. I heard the telltale thud of his body disturbing the sand. Then the spectators roared their approval. I stood upright, unmoving, as the crowd jumped to their feet, chanting my number over and over again. 901! 901! 901! My eyes scanned the crowd, hatred dripping off me in waves, until my eyes found Master. Master was sitting on his seat, the gilded seat, which was central to the pit. And he glared. It was a glare filled with a mixture of pride and censure. I waited for him to give me permission to leave. When he did, with a dismissive flick of the wrist, I turned on my heel and stormed back down the tunnel. I trudged through the darkened hallway back to my cell when Master suddenly appeared before me. I stopped, remaining stock still. Immediately, I dropped my head in submission. My eyes focused on Master's perfectly polished black shoes, his legs draped in the finest of suits. And I waited. I waited for him to speak. I told you to make it slower this time. I told you to create the show. You kill far too quickly. You're costing me money. No one will bring their best fighters to face you unless you show an element of weakness. You don't ever appear beatable. My jaw clenched at this harsh reprimand. My hands tightened on my king jaws as they hung at my sides. I don't lose, I grunted in reply. Master's feet closed in until he was looking up at me. He was tall, dark, and broad. I was taller. I was broader. I was his prize killer. I was made of stacked, ripped muscles. He'd ensure it. I was brutal strength made real. He'd designed me to be that way. And best of all, I held no fear. Master had made sure I endured enough punishment that fear held no place in my black heart. He had been so thorough that I now didn't even fear the male who owned me. 901, he chided, showing me that fear bubbled just under a veneer of calmness. You are my best fighter, my champion, my pit bull. He stepped closer still. Don't force me to hurt you. His hand lifted. In a move that always disgusted me beyond measure, he slowly stroked a finger down the side of my face. I froze as his fingertip ran over my lips and down my chest. His finger traced the inked tattoo on my chest. My identity number, 901. I risked a glance into his eyes as he stared, transfixed at the ink. My veins filled with blazing fire. Flames replaced blood, because Master was insane. Master lived for this, to dominate us, his slaves. In the blood pit, he was a king. Worst of all, he believed it. Clearing his throat, Master stepped back and withdrew his hand. My gaze dropped to the sand beneath my feet again. 901, you have no choice in this. In an instant, his personality switched. He lost his anger and sighed.
Don't make me punish you. It would pain me greatly to punish you, my champion of champions.
My skin pricked at his words, because he meant it. Master would punish me, I had no doubt. He was feared by all, a predator, a born killer. He got off on inflicting pain on his slaves. But more than that, he got off on the mind fuck. The not knowing what he was thinking, not knowing if today would be the day he chose to have you killed. His entire empire was built on a foundation of fear. But I didn't have this fear. I was too important to him, I knew it. He knew it. Everyone knew it. I had no weakness for him to exploit. That pissed him off more than anything else. He waited for my answer. Taking a deep breath, I replied, I won't slow down. I won't be beat. He shook his head and smiled. But there was no humor in his smile. There was only challenge. That's where you are wrong, 901. Everyone has a weakness. His eyes flared, and he added, It's just a question of finding it. Speaking against command, I replied, I don't have a weakness. I don't allow myself weakness, ever. Master didn't respond. He remained still, directly in front of me, for several minutes, silent, pensive. Until he moved aside, which I took to be my cue to leave. As I hurried down the hallway to my cell, Master shouted, You'll yield, 901. I'll spare you for your insubordination this time, but don't think you are immune from punishment. Everyone is replaceable in the pit, even you. Someone stronger and faster always comes along. Weaknesses will be found, and I assure you, they'll be exploited. I stilled. His cold, lifeless voice washed slowly over my skin. Master's footsteps approached. The light padding of his shoes on the sand slicing through the cloying silence to where I stood. He hovered a moment, asserting his authority over me. Then, finally, he walked away. When his footsteps died in the distance, I marched back to my cell. His words ran through my brain with every step, my lips curling in pure hatred. Long ago I had resolved that no matter what he said or did, I would not let him break me. I wouldn't kill my opponent slower, and I certainly wouldn't put on a show, feign failure, and hide the power my body held. More important, I wouldn't show weakness. In my 21 years in this hellhole, I had never shown him weakness, because this was the motherfucking blood pit. Weak males died. Champions fell. Only the most brutal killers survived. And I too would die on the sand, but not until Master brought me someone who was worthy and ruthless enough to stop my heart. Only then would I breathe my last breath. My strength, my refusal to bend to his will, was the only choice I had left in this life. He'd stripped me of everything else, freedom, happiness, free will. But my pride as a warrior was just for me. The only thing I called my own. I wouldn't let him take that, too. I sucked in a deep breath and increased my speed, safe in the knowledge that there was no one out there that could defeat me any time soon, because I was the Russian pit bull, the collector of souls. This was my domain. The blood pit was my arena, and I'd fight until the end.
1:152. The blood pit, Georgia. Unknown location. A warm breeze rippled over my skin, rousing me from sleep. My eyes were leaden as I tried to blink them open. When I finally succeeded, my vision was blurred. I tried to lift my head, but it ached, and the pain pulsed down my spine. A small cry left my lips as I tried to lift my arms and legs. They were racked by aches and featured the sensation of being pricked with 1,000 needles. My mouth was dry. My eyes finally cleared enough to stare at the stone ceiling above me. The stone was a dull gray. Yet, in contrast to my surroundings, I lay on something soft and comfortable, my head sinking into what felt like the softest of down covered in silk. My eyebrows pulled together in confusion. Managing to move my stiff fingers, I ran them along the soft fabric beneath me. Taking a deep breath, I held it in and forced myself to turn onto my side. I stifled a pained moan that was about to slip through my lips. I panted with exertion. I squeezed my eyes shut. When the pain had subsided, I opened my eyes and stared at what was before me. I was in a bed? A real bed. A large, soft bed. My head was thick with confusion. My heart raced in panic at being here. I had never earned the privilege of a bed. This time I ignored the pain and shuffled my head higher on the luxurious pillow until the room loomed into view. It was large and decorated beautifully. White drapery hung from the ceiling, tenting the room. There were several carpets of the richest reds and what appeared to be old brown furniture, perfectly situated around the outskirts. I tried to think of where I could be, but my mind was a thick fog. I shut my eyes, the harsh light forcing me to shy away. Then it dawned. I wasn't used to light. I was used to darkness. But why? I didn't know. I racked my brain trying to remember. All that emerged were fragmented images. Cages, needles, pain, red-hot fire in my veins. The unbearable need for it to be extinguished. Then darker visions followed. Visions of males dressed in heavy suits of black. A house filled with children. Those children being taken away, ripped from their beds. My hands began to shake, fingers curling into weak fists. Wraiths. Night wraiths, my mind whispered as the words moved on. Then a featureless face came forth. A brutally scarred, featureless face. The face of a monster. Yet as scary as this huge, muscled, scarred monster was, I felt no fear. In fact, it was the opposite. I felt safe. On seeing this face, warmth cocooned me. My hands stopped trembling, but the face remained. It gave way to a deep, raw voice assuring me that he would save me, at any cost, that he would come for me wherever I was, that we'd once again be free. I felt the soft, wet touch of a teardrop on my hand. Only then did I realize I was crying. My eyebrows furrowed, wondering why I was crying. Once again I racked my brain, trying in earnest to remember why this man was so important to me. I teetered on the very edge of discovery, until the door to my right opened. I froze as a young woman slowly entered the room. My eyes were wide and my breathing labored as I inspected her. She was small, dressed in a long, ill-fitted gray dress. She walked with a slight limp. When her head finally turned in my direction, I gasped audibly. The right side of her face was disfigured. No hair grew on that side of her head. The young female's dark features were marred by thick, ugly scars. On her back, I noticed the unique identity tattoo that betrayed her status. A Chiri. One of the plagues. The lowest type of slave in the blood pit. Their tattoos read 000, denoting that they had no names. That they were shades of our world. The bit players who were so lowly that they were not even worthy of a personal ID. I frowned at how I knew all of this information. The blood pit. My mind raced with the realization of where I was, the place I feared most. I was in the blood pit. But how? Where? Why? As if feeling my shocked stare, the Chiri's eyes met my own. She stilled, then quickly dropped her head. A lump clogged in my throat. She looked no older than a teenager. Maybe 15 or 16. The Chiri turned to scurry to the other side of the large room. But I managed to call out, "No, please don't." I swallowed hard, feeling as if a million shards of glass were massaging my throat. I coughed to rid myself of the unpleasant sensation. As I did, the Chiri rocked on her feet with indecision. Finally, her shoulders slumped as she dropped the linen she was holding in her hands and rushed to my bedside. I watched her as she poured water from the jug beside me into a glass. Without lifting her downcast eyes, she handed me the glass. I tried to lift my hand to take the drink, but the pain of moving even a muscle was too great. Tears welled in my eyes. The frustration of my confusing predicament too much to take. As a teardrop fell to the pillow beneath me, the edge of the glass was suddenly placed at my lips. When I blinked back the tears blurring my vision, the Chiri was gesturing for me to drink. As soon as the cool liquid hit my tongue, I closed my eyes. I drank and I drank until I had emptied the glass. The Chiri refilled the glass, and I drank that too. When she went to fill a third, I whispered, "No, that's enough. Thank you." The young female kept her head down and went to walk away. Before she could, I begged, "No, please stay. I shook my head, wincing at the ache it brought. Pushing the pain aside, I asked, "Where am I? Why am I in such a room? I'm so confused." The Chiri did as commanded, and without meeting my eyes, she replied, "You are in the Haimona suite, miss. Master commanded it." In a split second of clarity, I remembered what I was. I was a Mona, a slave used for her body to give males pleasure whenever they wished. Ice replaced the warm blood running through my veins. Shivers broke out along my skin and traveled down my spine. Haimona? Master? Sweet? Master Arziani. That name sent a rapid shock to my heart, its beat increasing in speed. I wasn't sure why this master scared me so, but again, I trusted my instincts, which told me to fear him greatly. Dragging in a much-needed breath, I asked, "I'm in the blood pit?" The question left my mouth, words laced with the confusion that still smogged my mind. "Yes, miss. You were brought back 6 weeks ago. You have been gone a while." Shock rippled through my body.
6 weeks? Brought back?
I questioned. The Chiri nodded once in response. I racked my brain trying to remember anything about where I had been, any morsel of memory from the past 6 weeks, but there was nothing. Panic flooded my senses.
"I don't remember," I said hoarsely. "I don't remember anything."
The blurred, scarred face of the male flickered through my mind yet again. I tried to hold on to the image of his face. I remembered that he had blue eyes. Somehow familiar blue eyes. But before I could understand why, he had disappeared, sucked back into whichever black hole was stealing all conscious thought. My chest constricted and the ability to breathe was taken from me. My dry lips parted as I fought for air. Despite the pain, my hand moved to my chest and gripped over my heart. Panic surged through me and my feet began to kick. But my traitorous body wouldn't move. The aches and pains held it down. A whimper escaped from my lips. Suddenly, two hands gripped my arms and held me in place. Frantically, I looked up. The Chiri had leaned over the bed and was trying to keep me calm.
"I can't breathe,"
I forced out. The Chiri finally met my gaze. Her eyes were dark and large. She would have been pretty, I thought, if it had not been for the ravaged side of her face.
"You're panicking," she said softly. "It's the drugs. You have been weaned off one and placed on another, a lower, less intense dosage. It's why you're in pain. It's why you're struggling to remember anything. Your brain needs time to adjust."
Reaching out, I gripped the Chiri's arms and followed the rhythm of her breathing. She inhaled slowly, and I attempted to fall in step with her calm, rhythmical breathing. My heart had been beating so fast I was sure it would burst from my chest. After minutes of controlled breathing, it regained its normal beat. I could once again breathe, my pulse slowed to a steady beat. Yet I didn't let go of the Chiri's arms. Seeing I was calm, the Chiri lowered her head. As she did, I studied her up close. My heart dropped. The disfigurement, what appeared to be a burn mark, was severe. Her hair was patchy and her skin was red over her right cheek, neck, and ear. A wave of sorrow washed over me. What had she been subjected to? How was this done? But worse, why was this considered normal? Why did seeing someone so brutally scarred not shock me? Then I thought back to her words, as anxiety once again tried to hold me in its clutches. Drugs? The drugs? Opening my mouth, I whispered, "Drugs? You said drugs?" After a brief pause, the Chiri replied,
"Yes, miss."
"Please," I asked, "explain. I find myself confused. My mind is a jumble of thoughts. I can't pin anything down." The Chiri paled. She shook her head.
"I am not authorized to speak of such things. I've been sent here to care for you. Nothing more."
"Please," I begged. "Why am I here? How am I here? I need something to make sense." My head pounded as I grew silent. It was several seconds before the Chiri replied.
"You were with Mistress Arziani for a long time. You were not in the blood pit, but Master called you back, so you returned. That's as much as I know."
I closed my eyes, trying to remember something, anything, but nothing was there.
"I don't remember," I whispered. "The drugs,"
the Chiri repeated. Opening my eyes, I waited for her to explain. After rolling her lips together nervously, she said,
"You were on the Monabi drug. You have been subjected to it for years. When Master called you home, he ordered you to be taken off it and instead put onto the High Mona formula."
"Why?"
"I do not know why, miss. I was simply brought in as your Chiri. I have been assigned to your care while you are High Mona. Every High Mona is assisted. It's part of your privileges."
A million questions clogged my fuzzy mind, but I picked out one to ask.
"High Mona?"
I shook my head slightly.
"Can you explain? I don't understand. What is a High Mona?"
The Chiri looked up and with a deep breath stated,
"Miss, you are Master's new personal consort. You have been elevated to be his, and only his. You are no longer the property of other males, as you were before."
All of the blood drained from my face as her words reached my ears. Releasing her arms, I stared down at my hands and saw them shaking. I searched my mind for why the news that I was Master's High Mona was a bad thing, but I couldn't remember. It was as though a high wall shielded my past from my mind's eye, obscuring the answers to the many questions I had.
"Why am I shaking?"
I asked nervously.
"Why does this cause me to feel fear?"
I clenched my hands together into fists, gritting my teeth through the aching pain. My eyes then scanned the room, at the luxury and the opulence. Nothing looked familiar. Instinctively, I just knew that I did not belong. As that thought passed through my mind, another took its place. I felt the soft bed beneath me, breathed in the clean, fragrant air, and asked, "If I am the new Haimona, what happened to the last?" The air seemed to fill with tension. As I glanced up to the Chiri, I pushed. "Tell me." "She was killed, miss." My heart dropped. "How?" "I do not know, miss. She was disobedient. I don't know how or why, but Master put her to death, publicly, in the pit."
"The pit?"
"The pit is where Master's fighters have their matches, miss." Lifting my hand to my head, I gripped my hair. "I don't remember anything. Yet everything seems so familiar, if that makes any sense at all. It's like I hold the answers to all of my questions, but they are lost somewhere in my mind and I can't access them." "You will remember them again someday," the Chiri informed. "The new Haimona drug you have been put on brings with it the clarity you were missing on the Type B drug. It takes a while, but hopefully sooner rather than later you will remember things that seem out of reach now. The weaker drug is a better drug to be on, miss. Believe me. It shields you from pregnancy, yet it still gives you the need to be taken for Master's benefit. Though it will not hurt you and drive you insane like before. Master likes his Haimonas to be aware of his touch. He likes you to be aware of him at all times. He wants you to feel every single second of being with him. He wants you to remember exactly who you are servicing." "How do you know this?" I asked. The Chiri paused nervously, then said, "It is common knowledge among the slaves, miss. Master does not hide much." Freeing my hair from my hands, I let them drop as fear began climbing back up my spine. Fear of being the solo consort of Master. The male I had no conscious memory of, but a male that my mind told me I already knew well. Silence filled the room, then I asked, "Why me? Why have I been chosen? Has Master taken me before? I feel like he may have. I feel like he has touched me before now." The Chiri's shoulders stiffened, but she eventually whispered, "Yes, miss. He was the only male servicing you here in the first few weeks when the Monabi drug still held you in its grasp. Since your initial need for his release calmed, he has been eagerly waiting for you to wake fully, with a clear mind." Her eyes flitted to mine, then quickly looked away. "What?" I asked with dread. The Chiri didn't add anything, so I shook her arm and pushed harder. "What? Tell me." "You have caught his eye, miss. More than I've seen before. He has been visiting you every day, waiting for you to open your eyes. That is not normal for him. He is Master. He can have anyone he desires. But he is solely focused on you."
"He is?"
I asked, swallowing down my apprehension. "Yes, miss. He will be very happy you're awake. He's been getting agitated. He hasn't even taken another Mona. He wants only you." Feeling my body aching, I slumped back against the pillows. The Chiri hovered by, building up the courage to continue. "Miss, I've worked for the Mona Bee all my life. Though you don't remember what you have been through yet, you should eventually. If you remember, you will be thankful that you have been elevated to this new status." She glanced down, then sighed. "The Monabi life is one of violence and servitude. We are all owned and controlled by Master, but even though I am the lowest of low, I would willingly take my Chiri status over being a Mona."
"The things they make you do."
She swallowed, cheeks flushing with red, and quickly added,
If you submit and obey every command asked of you by Master, you will find yourself much better off. The Chiri then seized the opportunity to rush from the bed and commence her duties. I watched as she efficiently gathered fresh bed linens and put them in a dresser. Then she moved to a large bathtub and began filling it with water. She added some kind of liquid to the water, and the room quickly filled with the most beautiful perfumed scent. I closed my eyes as the aroma washed over me. When I opened my eyes, the Chiri was walking to the side of the room with the red dress in her hands. She laid it out on a table, then moved back toward the tub. She turned off the faucet and walked my way. When she stood at the side of my bed, she said, "Miss, I have orders to bathe you. I was instructed by Master that the moment you wake, I am to cleanse you, dress you, and prepare you, then inform him." Panic blossomed inside me again, but I held it back. I knew there was no way out of this. Something, some unknown voice inside my head, told me that I could not fight this fate, whatever it was. Pushing myself to sit up, I accepted the Chiri's offer to help to walk. I leaned heavily on her until I reached the tub. The Chiri undressed me and helped me slip into the hot water. As my body was enveloped in warmth, I sighed as my muscles relaxed, my pain evaporating with the rising steam. I closed my eyes, my eyelids pulled down by the tiredness. As I did, the image of the dark-haired female towering over me came to mind. The vision was blurred, but I could see her ordering a male to take me as I writhed in pain on the floor. In the vision, I also saw the scarred male from my previous memory being restrained in the corner of a small room, a metal collar tightly fastened around his thick neck. And he was fighting to be free while I was on the hard floor, a deep, unbearable pain tearing me apart from inside. He was being forced to watch me being ravaged. And at the sight, his huge, built body radiated rage. The scarring male roared as the one taking me released himself within me. But in that stranger's release, there was a dampening of the pain I was in. The release brought a brief moment of peace. I remembered closing my eyes, and as I did, the female ordered the scarred male to kill someone. She promised him that if he killed, I would be freed. Even in my drugged state, I knew that her words held no truth. By the look on the scarred male's face, I could see he knew it too. Yet he did as instructed. In his expression, I could see that he would always do as she said, because next time could be the time I was set free. The room I'd been kept in was cold and dark, but the male agreed to anything asked of him without question. Just as the vision began to disperse, a flood of guilt, shame, and sheer sadness blistered my heart. Snapping my eyes open, I felt something from my left prick my skin, ripping me from my memory, ripping me from unanswered sorrow. The Chiri was at my side, injecting something into my arm. A clear liquid. But I didn't fight against it. I somehow knew not to fight. Knew that this happened to me daily. This was my life. 2. 152. I felt the liquid from the needle begin to rush through my veins, and with it came lightness to my limbs. The pain and the ache in my muscles dissolved until all that was left was a heady feeling, a feeling of warmth. Then my eyelids fluttered as that warmth began to travel south between my legs. A whimper left my throat at the tension building at the apex of my thighs. "Miss," the Chiri called gently. I slowly opened my eyes, feeling a blush on my cheeks. She stood beside me, holding out a soft plush towel. Rising from the tub, I let her wrap me in the towel, not questioning why. I knew I never asked why. There was no explanation of anything in my life. The Chiri guided me to a chair. A large, full-length mirror sat before me, and I stared at the female looking back. Blue eyes, dark hair, cheeks flushed with pink. She was slim and fairly tall. Her skin was a light olive color. I stared and stared.
numbed by the effects of the needle as the Chiri fixed my waist-length hair and made up my face with powders and creams. I stood when she guided me to stand, then let her drape me in a long silken dress, the floor-length material held together by two straps fastened with silver clasps at the shoulders. A large slit sat on either leg, showing the now glistening, fragrantly oiled skin beneath. I rocked on my feet as the ache between my legs increased. I clenched my thighs together, searching for release, but none came. Just as I was sure I couldn't bear this searing ache anymore, a sound came from the door behind, and the Chiri guided me to stand in the center of the room. The Chiri immediately backed away and slunk into the shadows, keeping out of sight. Even in the light fog clouding my mind, I registered confusion at her behavior. She appeared terrified, desperately afraid of whoever was about to show himself. Then a male entered the room, a domineering, mysterious male. His dark eyes immediately collided with mine, and he stopped dead. He was dressed in a clean, dark suit and green tie. His black hair was pushed off his head, his strong, chiseled jaw dusted in dark stubble. I noticed that he was fairly handsome. Older than me by quite a lot of years, but handsome nonetheless. Then he smiled, and I stilled. Before I could do anything else, a devastating wave of need took me in its hold, and a small cry left my mouth. The male's dark eyes flared with excitement, and he walked forward, slowly and controlled. Predatory. The strong, musky scent of his skin washed over me as he approached. I rocked on my feet as another wave of heat filled me inside, scorching my muscles. In reaction to my whimper, the male lifted his hand to my face. He towered over me in height and breadth. His large hands were smooth and soft.
"You're even more beautiful than the Greek goddess," he murmured, then ran his hand down over my neck.
Pressure built between my legs at his touch, my body yearning for him to slip his hand lower to relieve the pressure. I gasped, unable to keep my eyes open, when another rush of heat filled me. I grew wet between my thighs. Suddenly, the male's hand dropped and cupped my core. I snapped my eyes open, my pulse racing with need. The male's nostrils flared at my reaction, and he leaned in, running his nose over the tip of mine. His fingers at my core began to move toward my entrance, and I sighed at the feel, needing him to push them inside my channel.
"Beautiful," he murmured as his mouth drifted to my ear,
his fingers dancing along my hot flesh.
"You need me, don't you, 152? You need Master to take away the pressure, to make you feel better, to make that pussy calm."
I moaned in response, but I heard him. I heard his every word. This male was Master Arziani. This was the male I was meant to serve. I moaned again as his free hand twisted something on the shoulder of my dress and the fabric fell away to the floor, pooling at my feet. The cool air kissed my naked skin. A low, hungry moan left his throat, and in seconds, his eager mouth was on my breast. As his tongue flicked over my tight nipple, I cried out. His hands at my core worked faster, bringing me to the edge of relief. Just as the ache was about to be soothed, Master backed away and ordered,
"Bed. Get on the bed. On your back."
His voice had lowered to a stern rasp. I did as instructed as Master quickly shed himself of his clothes. The muscles rippled on his stomach as he approached, his strong, thick legs covered in a dusting of dark hair. Lying back, I spread my legs, inviting him inside, kneading him above me. But when Master reached the end of the bed, instead of covering me with his body, he dropped to his knees and took me with his mouth. An ecstatic scream left my throat as I felt him flick over my bud with the tip of his tongue. I fisted the bed linen in my hands as a wave of pleasure crashed over me. But the pressure at the bottom of my spine didn't leave. Instead, it heightened. It built and built until my body was alive with the urge to be taken, rough, raw, and filled with Master's seed. A light sheen of sweat covered my skin, and Master broke his mouth away from my core, crawling slowly and steadily until he was above me. My back arched, searching for more. His touch, his warmth, his hands. Our gazes collided, and he licked his lips as his hand palmed my breast. I rolled my hips as Master placed himself between my legs, the feel of his hard length moving to wait at my entrance. I tried to push forward, but Master's hands reached up to grip my wrists over my head. His grip was too tight to fight, and I thrashed, desperately needing some relief. Master's face dropped to hover over mine, and he pressed kisses along my cheek. When he withdrew slightly, he said,
"I knew it would be like this with you. You were born to be a Haimona. Your unrivaled looks, this body, this insatiable need for me to fuck you. Your master."
His pupils dilated and I bit my lip as I felt the tip of his length pushing inside me. As he thrust forward, his grip on my wrists increased until a flash of pain crashed through me, eradicating the pleasure. But as I cried out from pain, he slammed inside of me in one swift move, and I screamed at the feel. Too many conflicting sensations were running through me as he began slamming into me, each thrust bringing me closer and closer to the brink. Master groaned above me, with me moaning in reply as his hard chest brushed against my breasts. Master's warm breath ghosted over my face. Moving his mouth closer to my ear, he growled,
"I own you, Mona. I own every part of you. You're mine."
I cried out as his grip on my wrists tightened, causing a brutal pain to override the pleasure.
"Do you hear me?"
he asked, suddenly pausing in his taking of me. His handsome face was stern and unyielding, staring me down. I moaned in protest, trying to roll my hips to feel him move within me once again. But he held still, his eyes hard and crazed with the need for my response.
"Yes,"
I replied breathlessly. I screamed as his grip became so hard on my wrists that I feared the bones would break.
"Master," he hissed, "show your fucking respect, Mona."
"Yes, Master," I corrected quickly, holding my breath immediately afterward. Master's face softened, his anger dissipated, and his grip on my wrists slackened.
"That's better,"
he praised, and released one of my wrists to place his hand on my cheek. Ensuring I looked him in the eyes with a firm grip on my jaw, he scolded,
"I won't tolerate any disobedience from you, Mona. You belong to me. As such, I'll treat you like a queen."
His mouth moved to my ear as he whispered,
"But disobey me in any way, and I'll make you regret the day you were born."
He raised his hands and kissed my lips softly, sweetly, in stark contrast to the threatening words issuing from his mouth. Fisting my hair and abruptly ripping my head back, he demanded,
"Do you understand, Mona? Tell me you understand my every word."
White hot pain spread along my scalp under his grip. The unbearable feeling stood in contrast to the need between my legs.
"Yes, Master,"
I gulped as tears left the corner of my eyes. Master released my hair and a devastatingly handsome smile spread on his full lips.
"Good,"
he announced proudly, his fingers now massaging the scalp he'd just bruised. His smile dropped as his hard length twitched and pulsed within me. I waited for what would happen next, unsure if it would be pleasure or pain. Then, still inside me, he abruptly spun me around until I straddled his hips. His hands ran over my thighs, finally gripping my hips as my palms landed flat on his broad, muscled chest.
"Fuck me,"
he ordered, his dark eyes blazing in excitement. His hands tightened on my hips until I was sure they would leave a bruise.
"Take me until I feel you."
And I did. Needing his release, I let his harsh grip guide me until my eyes closed and my head snapped back, embracing the rapture. Body stiffening, I cried out a long, loud moan, digging my nails into the flesh on Master's chest as he stilled beneath me, roaring out his own pleasure. As his seed filled me, it soothed the heat within my channel. My skin tingled as I remained poised over his hips, slowly rocking back and forth as Master's length jerked inside me. I didn't know how much time had passed, but as my breathing slowed to a calm, I lowered my head and fluttered open my eyes. I was met with a dark, satisfied gaze, a gaze that watched my every move, a predator, a true master of the pit. A cold sensation began creeping up my spine and continued spreading all over my body as I remained transfixed by his stare. As the insatiable need to be taken ebbed, the reality of this moment hit me hard. This was Master, the male who controlled all fates in the pit, the person who decided whether we lived or died. And I had been selected to please him. Real, true fear settled in my heart.
"My delicate, pretty petal," Master purred, voice low.
His fingertips drifted off my hips and brushed along my stomach until they dropped to my core. He ran his fingers through my wetness, and as they did, his hips raised, tearing another moan from my mouth.
"You like that petal?"
he asked. I drew in a deep breath, but before I could speak, he bit out,
"Answer me."
My eyes opened as I flinched at the aggression in his voice.
"Yes, Master," I replied quickly. "I like that, Mister."
My words were a balm to Master, and he relaxed back on the bed. Glancing down at my hands on his chest, I paled when I saw nail marks on his skin, blood gathering underneath. I snatched my hands back and watched, in trepidation, as Master glanced down at the blood. My heart pounded in terror at what he might do next. But to my surprise, a wide, happy smile spread on his lips, and his eyes grew leaden with desire. I swallowed down my trepidation when Master's hand rubbed over the small speckles of blood. Then, to my surprise, he raised his finger to his lips and sucked the blood off the tip. When he lowered his finger, he looked at me and said,
"I knew you were born to be mine."
His hands landed on my waist and dragged along my skin until they cupped my breasts, palming the soft flesh. My nostrils flared as his touch reignited my desire, and my hips began to rock back and forth.
"I knew when I watched you on those cameras, when you were with my bitch of a sister, that you were who I'd been waiting for, that the other high monos couldn't hold a candle to you."
Master's length began to harden within me again, and he softly thrust his hips, increasing my pleasure. I moaned, and Master groaned in reply. I worked my hips faster still, until I started to search for release. Master's hands tightened on my breasts, and I cried out as his grip bordered on pain.
"That's it, Petal," he murmured. "Take me hard as you feel this pain."
Pleasure overriding the pain he gave, pressure built at my core and tingles spread over my skin as I chased the pleasure coming over the horizon. Master groaned and he began to slam into me with vigor. As he did so, it wasn't long before I fell over the precipice and burst apart with light. I fell forward, slumping onto Master's chest as he thrust into me three more times and spilled his seed within me, extinguishing the embers of desire that the shot of the new drug had ignited. Master's arms wrapped around me, but I could tell it wasn't in affection but possession. His grip was unyielding, his arms a cage of flesh and bone. He held me close, my eyes squeezing shut at the hum of fear that still buzzed under the surface of my skin. Now that the effects of the drug had faded, with its false desire muted and still, I had no idea what to do next. My memories were silent, but I was sure I'd never been with a male drug-free before. I simply had no idea how to act. Master's fingers traced lazy circles on my back. I breathed slowly, trying to stifle a cry.
Do you know why I call you Petal 152?
He asked softly, a gentler, more affectionate side appearing at the forefront of his personality.
No, Master, I replied timidly.
Master's hand ran up to my hair and combed through the dark tresses. His hand stilled. He turned his head toward my face to answer.
Because, just like a petal, you can be easily destroyed. But while intact, you are so very beautiful to admire.
Although spoken tenderly, the weight of his words hung like a dagger over my head. Master continued stroking my hair like he hadn't issued a threat. A threat I knew was just as every bit a promise.
Yes, Master, I answered weakly.
Master sighed happily in response. He turned his face to mine and began peppering kisses up and down my cheek.
Oh, you smell and taste so good, Petal, he murmured.
I closed my eyes and let him do as he pleased. But I realized, as I lay in his arms, that I did not like his touch. Although this male was handsome, there lurked a cruel monster beneath. If I was the petal of a flower, then he was most certainly the thorn.
Come, Master said finally, after minutes of running his hands over my body.
As his now flaccid length was withdrawn from my body, I rolled to the side and allowed him to rise. As he stood up from the bed, he pointed to something in the dark side of the room. A door then opened, and the Chiri from before entered the room. A guard had let her in. A guard who, I quickly realized, had watched Master take me.
The night wraiths,
a faint echo in my head stated. The thought fled as someone took hold of my elbow and guided me to a sectioned-off room. When I looked down, I saw the person's nape. The identity tattoo read 000. The Chiri.
Come, miss,
she urged, and pulled me into what appeared to be a bathroom, a gold-gilded, opulent bathroom. A toilet, basin, and extra tub filled the vast space on one side. On the other side was a plush seating area. The Chiri pulled me toward the tub. Wetting a cloth, she began to wipe away Master's seed from my thighs and core. I stared at the stone wall before me, dazed, fighting the fuzziness that still occupied my mind. After the Chiri dried my thighs with a soft towel, she led me to the seating area and guided me down to a seat. She made quick work of opening a large set of double doors. I looked up to see rows and rows of dresses, beautiful, vibrantly colored dresses. The Chiri pulled another out, and I stood as she clothed me. I looked down at this dress. I saw it was a deep green. I idly thought how beautiful this color was. I frowned, wondering if I had ever noticed the color of anything before. Currently, the images in my head were revealed only in grayscale. As I scanned this room, I realized that life here was lived in color. Yet it did not hold within it any form of beauty the vibrant colors should bring. The Chiri backed away two steps and nodded her head.
You look beautiful, miss. Master will be pleased.
On hearing the Chiri's words, I stared at her. Her head was downcast. I could see a blush on her neck, creeping to her face. Stepping forward, I placed my hand on her shoulder. She tensed.
You don't need to bow your head to me, Chiri.
But the Chiri didn't raise her head. Instead, she replied,
I'm a Chiri, miss. We are below everyone. Master commands it to be so.
She paused, then added,
And you are High Mona, miss. You are now elevated in status. From whatever that was, this is who you are now. There's no going back once Master commands it.
My hand fell from her shoulder, and once it did, the Chiri scuttled out of the room, waiting in the doorway for me to follow. Knowing that I had no other choice, I followed. We entered the room where Master was waiting. As soon as he saw me, his eyes flared and his lips tightened as though he was fighting for breath. Once again, he was dressed impeccably in his suit, not a hair out of place. Master held out his hand. Forcing my feet to move, I walked to where he stood, placing my palm against his. Lifting my hand to his mouth, he placed a kiss on the back of my hand and pulled me beside him, linking his arm through mine. Turning us to the only door in the room, he paused, looked at me, and declared,
"You look beautiful, 152, like a vision."
Bowing my head, I replied,
"Thank you, Master."
Leaning in close, he brushed a strand of hair from my neck, placed a single kiss over my pulse, and added,
"And a quick study. Let's hope you stay disobedient. My high monabi have a habit of breaking my trust and consequently losing their lives."
He nuzzled his rough cheek against my cheek and said,
"I would really dislike it if you forced my hand. I hate to see such beautiful."
"Yes, Master," I whispered, my hands shaking. Master straightened and smiled wide.
"That's what I like to hear."
Securing my arm through his, he led us out a door, past a guard dressed in a jet-black uniform. I glanced back at the guard, just to see his hard eyes staring at us as we left. A trickle of ice-cold shivers ghosted down the nape of my neck as an image sprang to my mind of two children, an older boy and a younger girl hiding under a bed. A deep sense of sorrow followed. I racked my brain, fighting to keep tight hold of the memory as Master guided us through a dank, dark hallway and down a set of stone stairs. Guards lined the hallways every so often, and as we passed, they stood attention and saluted Master. He paid no heed to their obvious show of allegiance and respect. He just kept his head high and his attention straightforward. As the faint sound of clattering metal and shouts increased in volume the farther we walked, I began to wonder where we were going. I didn't have to wonder long, for as we turned a corner, the mouth of the hallway revealed the answer to my question. I stared, gaping at the vast expanse before me. A space so wide that I struggled to interpret exactly what I was seeing. Master stepped forward and held out his free hand.
"The blood pit," he announced,
his voice laced with pride and conceit. The blood pit. My eyes struggled to absorb the many males segregated into hundreds of small sand pits. And they were fighting. Weapons of all descriptions were being used. The males of all shapes and sizes, but most were huge, muscled packed upon muscle, as they circled one another, sparring and drawing blood. They were all dressed the same, bare torsos, bare feet, and black pants. Guards lined the side of the pits. Most held metal prods, sparking at their tips with what appeared to be the arcs of blue fire. If a male stepped out of bounds or stopped fighting, he was struck with the prod. Most fell to the ground in obvious pain, like boiling hot lead was scalding them from within. Suddenly, the image of the scarred male that had plagued my thoughts since I'd awoken filled my mind. I could see him, as clear as day, standing before me as a boy, a large tattoo on his chest as he was forced to fight. Forced to fight as I was forced to watch, just like this. And he did. He fought everyone as commanded, reaching for me when all of his opponents had been defeated. But as had happened every day since, I was taken away. And then, I didn't know. As my vision cleared, I whispered,
"I have seen this before. I have been here before."
Master stiffened beside me, then asked,
"What?"
My heart raced with fear. I shouldn't have spoken of my own accord. Swallowing back my nerves, I repeated,
"I said, I think I have been here before."
I frowned, struggling to remember. Master's dark eyes narrowed. Straightening my shoulders, I continued,
"But I do not remember how, why, or when. Surely I must be mistaken."
Master did not move for several seconds, nor did his expression change. Eventually, he moved to stand before me, blocking out the view of hundreds of males fighting. His hands reached up to cup my cheeks, and he smiled.
You were raised here, 152. You spent many days here as a child and as a teen. One of our most standout Monobi. Suddenly, his face frosted over as he unleashed his anger. If I had known you before, you would have been with me from a young age. But my sister found you first, and now you are home.
He stepped back and linked my arm through his again. To my empire, he added. My attention was immediately drawn to his face. I studied his expression and saw the happiness radiating through.
I am the only male on the planet who has this as his kingdom.
He gestured with a sweep of his arm, then continued.
A Caesar for the modern age. An empire built on strength and skill. A gladiatorial Rome right here in Georgia. An arena where we root out the gods from the men. The arena where my word is law. Where lives are saved or taken by the simple flick of my wrist.
In a split second, Master dropped his exuberant, insane excitement and assumed a neutral air of composure. My head ached with his constant change of moods. But more than anything, my fear of him grew minute by minute. In the short time I had spent with him, he had shown many versions of himself, none of which I liked, all of which were terrifying. Master patted my hand and pulled me forward along a path that ran along the edge of the sunken pits. From our vantage point, we could see every strain of bare muscle, every drop of sweat glistening over scarred skin, and we could hear every grunt of exertion. Such energies generated a highly charged static, which hovered in the musty air. This place stank of violence and death. The male beside me, the male who had just taken me, was truly the master of all he surveyed, and king of these slaves. Master pointed out certain pits as we passed.
New fighters. They'll be first-round fighters only.
He explained without feeling. Casually talking about the group of males in training as though their days were numbered. He pointed to a pit farther across the room. It was a larger ring filled with larger men.
New transfers from our gulags in Western Europe. We're still determining their capabilities.
As my eyes focused on the males in training, one looked up and blatantly stared my way. Master tensed beside me. Then I cried out when his opponent swung his axe and buried its blade straight into the chest of the staring male. The male dropped to his knees. I stopped. Yet I didn't react. My nerves were altogether too calm, my demeanor too collected. I instinctively knew that I had seen death before. Death just like this. Quick, brutal, violent, senseless. Many deaths. Master continued my tour as though a male had not just lost his life. Glancing back, I stared at the number on his chest. 129. I repeated the number in my head. I silently mouthed the number on my lips. I did it because I knew, without thought, that no one else would ever remember the male who had just died here in the pits. Merely one of many nameless to needlessly perish. I frowned at this flicker of knowledge. Then Master pointed out other groups to me as we slowly circled his enterprise. Paired fighters, group fighters, veterans, those brought in from gulags from all areas of the world. I listened enough to show I was attentive and nodded in all the right places, and I offered a yes, master, or no, master, in response when it was expected. Then we stopped. We stopped at a secluded pit in the far rear of the training space. As I glanced into the sunken pit below, I saw the biggest male I had ever seen, dressed only in black pants, menacingly circling another male.
And here is the most important pit of all, Master explained.
I looked to his face and watched as a smile, a maniacal smile, spread on his lips. But he didn't look to me. Instead, his attention was fixed on the male in the pit. I followed his gaze. Just then the male turned, his large chest facing us. His identity number was showcased for all to see, 901. As if feeling my stare, 901 glanced up. Blue eyes met mine, but these were not kind blue eyes. They were cold and devoid of life. No warmth lived in that stare. No. All that glared up at me from this pit were the eyes of a killer. A brutal, and what appeared to be the most successful, killer under Master's command. Master squeezed my hand and announced,
901 is my prized champion, the undefeated pit bull of the Arziani pits. No one can touch him. He's infallible.
Master stopped abruptly, his jaw tensed.
Or so he tells me, he added.
I noted a hint of venom in his voice. Master dropped his head to the side as he stared at his champion, and he said, almost to himself,
but he has a weakness. I just need to find it.
Then Master appeared to freeze. When I looked down into the pit, trying to fathom what held him so captivated, I once again found the cold, hard stare of 901. He was still looking at me. My heart pounded under 901's scrutiny. I ducked my head to the side, edging closer to Master. He did not make me feel much safer, but 901's rawness and harsh attention seemed the greater threat to me right now. Then Master glanced to me. His eyes watched me and his lips curled in anger. Before I could understand what had triggered his rage, he called,
901, come here.
Master's loud command caused me to flinch, and I almost whimpered aloud as his grip on my arm became unyielding, to the point of pain. I kept my eyes down but heard the heavy thud of footsteps crunching on sand, approaching our vantage point. A fresh scent washed over me. Then I saw two large bare feet stop in my line of sight. Master eventually slackened his grip on me to guide my head up with a finger under my chin. I obeyed this silent order and lifted my head. But Master wasn't watching me. His attention was on the male standing a mere foot in front of us.
901, this is my new Haimona, 152, Master announced.
My attention remained with Master, but then Master's thumb and forefinger gripped my chin and forced my head to turn. Turn and meet the blue eyes of the champion of the pits. If I had thought 901 huge before, it was nothing to how he appeared now, standing before me. His chest was double my width, and his height towered above me, my head in line with his chest. Every inch of him was ripped with muscles, wide veins cording in his arms and neck. Despite myself, I noticed his face, mostly how handsome it could be if his stare wasn't so cruel. Master was beautiful, his dark features staggering and elite. But 901 was the epitome of rough and raw. Every inch of skin was marred with the scars of cruel tattoos, blood drops, decapitated heads, and what looked like images of shreds of torn flesh. My pulse raced as he held his stare. I felt a blush creep up my cheeks and sprout, clearly on my skin. As Master's grip tightened, I winced at the pain.
Piddle, meet 901, the pit bull of my arena.
Master leaned closer to 901 without letting me go, then added with obvious disdain,
my most successful pit.
My eyes, of their own accord, examined 901's face for a reaction. None was forthcoming, save for the slightest creases that formed at the corners of his severe eyes. And then I knew. I knew that being called Master's pet had struck a nerve. Master stepped closer to me, released my face, and leaned down to press a wet kiss on the side of my neck. 901 remained stoic, unmoving and completely unshaken.
What do you think, 901?
Master asked as he pressed against me, his lips still grazing my skin.
Don't you think my Mona is simply the most beautiful creature ever created?
Master then kissed up along my cheek. I breathed through the discomfort his touch brought. Realizing 901 wouldn't react, Master withdrew his hand and flicked his chin.
Get back to training. You have a match this weekend.
He leaned in closer to his finger and added,
Remember what I said. We have high rollers attending that night. I want them to return.
901 said nothing. Eventually, Master flicked his wrist and 901 marched away. He re-entered the pit, picked up two short-bladed weapons, one in each hand, and commenced sparring. Master guided me to leave by his hand upon my elbow. As he did so, I glanced back to the pit, where the now familiar face was looking my way.